Comic Timing is proudly sponsored by the New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd to 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPGs, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guest of honors include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, please visit nycomiccon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advance purchase at nycomiccon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need.
Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 27 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. This week, Brent Cassina, John Mayo, Matt Summer, and I discuss parallel universes in comics. Do they work, or do they simply complicate matters? Ian of Earth-36 hates the concept, but not this Ian. Don't get me started on Ian of Earth-Prime or that oddball Age of Apocalypse Ian. Oh boy. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 27 of Comic Timing. I am joined, as always, by the man from the land of beer. He is Matt Summer. What's going on, Matt?
Not too much, Ian. How you doing?
Doing pretty well, man. Doing pretty well. You recover yet from that crossover?
Yeah, just barely.
Hanging in there. But
that
2 hours...
You gotta watch out for that guy.
Oh, dude. He dropped plenty of nuts. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I actually got to meet those guys at Chicago this last year, so...
Yeah, and I got to meet them over at CGS 200. They're really nice guys. Yeah, without a doubt. We're also joined by a guy who is pretty familiar with Raging Bullets himself. In fact, he's got his own little thing he does on Raging Bullets now, BK's Bullets. It's Brent Cassina joining us once again.
Hey.
What's up, Brent?
What's going on?
Brent, what the hell is a BK Bullet? It sounds like a new Whopper variety.
No, I've been submitting audio comments to Raging Bullets. I did like four, and then I think Matthew Guy on the forum, and then Ian came up with like these like names for the segment. So Ian came up with BK's Bullets, I think, and then Matthew Guy came up with the DC have it your way DC style, kind of like Burger King, because my name's BK. That's my initials.
Would you like fries with that, sir? I guess that's a no. Well, dude, I can imagine what growing up with the initials BK must be like, so...
Hey, to me, they'll always be British Knights.
There you go. That works.
I don't get the reference, so...
Neither do I, but
it'll be Burger King.
Yeah,
God,
were you born in, like, the 2003?
86.
See, he's younger than I am. That's why I keep bringing him back.
I have underwear older than you.
Oh!
That's sad.
Information we did not need to know.
It's amazing you can still fit in them.
And already.
Kept my svelte figure ever since.
Oh, yes. And the other guy who's laughing hysterically, who I haven't introduced yet, he is the guy who does the Mayo Report for many different things. On Comic Book Resources, on Comic Geekspeak, on Collected Comics Library, he's John
Mayo. I'm
Donner
on Blitzen.
Exactly.
Well, it's that time of year. Hey, how you guys doing?
Ho, 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 John Mayo.
Hey.
What's up?
Not too much.
Glad
Is that
to
a fat
it.
Joke?
No! That is not a fat joke. And already we're right off the bat here. But what we're going to be talking about today is parallel universes. So it's possible that in a parallel universe I was making a fat joke, but not in this
one. Hey, hey!
Hey, I can't vouch for anything that, you know, Ian of Earth 17 is doing right now, all right? I can only vouch for I'm doing, all right?
What if Comic Timing didn't suck?
Oh!
Yikes!
Zing! What if I hung up on Matt right now?
Oh, man.
But anyway, here's what we're talking about on today's show. For as long as there have been comics, there have been not a hoax, not an imaginary story comics, which then turn out to be a hoax, an imaginary story. These comics then stemmed into an entire genre of their own, alternate futures, alternate histories, alternate characters, and so on. What is so intriguing about alternate universes that leads writers and artists to revisit the idea time and time again?
What is your favorite alternate storyline? Would you like to see Marvel and DC with their own monthly anthology showcasing these types of stories? What are their strengths and weaknesses found in What If and Elseworlds? All that and more will be discussed, so give us your thoughts. And I will, I guess, start it off with the guy who's, you know, read more comics than everybody else in this room. John, what do you think about parallel universes? I mean, do you enjoy parallel universe stories more than the regular universe stories at times?
At times, yeah, certainly. I love them. I think they're great. I mean, one of the things you can do in a well-crafted parallel world story is look at the characters from a totally different perspective, shine a different light on them, and get to know kind of the mainstream version better by kind of what they're not. Now, it's not always done that well or to that effect, but, I mean, they can be a lot of fun to read. Some of my favorite JLA stories, you know, when I was growing up and stuff, were the JLA-JSA crossovers, you know, where they had the Earth 1 and the Earth 2 characters, and then usually just for fun, they'd throw in a third group just for, you know, variety or whatnot.
Yeah, and that, so, of course, would be like, you know, Captain Carrot and his Merry Men.
No, but Captain Carrot actually did have a parallel world crossover story
Earth-C.
Along the lines. Yeah,
oh,
Earth-C
boy.
And Earth-C minus with just a lot of animals.
Oh, my God. Wow, Earth C and Earth C minus.
Yeah.
That's not exactly giving much of a good grade there for the Earths. Now,
must have been
it?
A big curve,
I guess.
Hey, it was average.
Hey, if you didn't live it, you can't comment on it.
Exactly.
Captain Ross. I don't know. I don't know why I loved that when I was whatever 14 when it came out. I guess, but
it was a fun series. I think they ought to bring it back, try it out. I mean, it's something you could do as an all ages title.
Oh sure, yeah. And, I mean, actually, the backup story that Geoff Johns did in that issue of Teen Titans a couple of issues back was actually not too bad. With the whole, like, Watchmen-type thing they did with the Captain Carrot, with the Captain Carrot characters was pretty damn cool.
Oh, man. Can't we just have a nice, funny animal book anymore without blood and violence and destruction and death?
Well, sure you can. It just can't be a DC or a Marvel one. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That's the problem. DC and Marvel don't like the animals. They want to, you know, kill them all. But, Matt, what about...
they have that book. It's Sonic the Hedgehog. Isn't that still around?
Yes. Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, isn't it pretty popular?
It is, actually, yeah. But the thing is about that is that I still cannot stand Sega for giving Shadow a freaking Glock. You know?
Sega!
Once they did that, I was... All my childhood was, like, magically disappeared. That's it.
Oh, me too. I actually... plotted to destroy Sega headquarters.
Really?
It fell apart, though, because I'm lazy.
Well, that's not too hard to do, since I don't even make systems anymore, so...
Yeah, I know. I'm still holding on to my Dreamcast and weeping quietly at night. But, you were asking me a question there?
Yes, Matt. What do you think about parallel universes?
Well, it's kind of a funny thing, because this question actually is very broad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was thinking about this before, and... if we include stuff like Earth 1 and Earth 2, and we talk about multiverse kind of stuff,
Parallel
I love that idea. I mean, I love that idea, and while I understand why DC got rid of them all during Crisis on Infinite Earths, I don't know, I kind of miss it, because, you know, the different parallel worlds gave you different platforms, different places to tell stories, that they didn't all have to be shoehorned into the mainstream DC universe. You know, for example, ever since they got rid of the Earth-S, you know, the Shazam universe, they've been trying to fit the guy into the mainstream grim and gritty DCU with, I think, very, very mixed results. The book has never sustained, you know, the kind of level it had during the 40s and the 50s. It's just never really caught on. I think part of the reason is that, you know, you have essentially sort of a humorous character put into a non-humorous universe.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily work. And I always got a kick out of the other, you know, like the All-Star Squadron universe as well. You have this, you know, alternate timeline where it's heroes are aging. And, you know, the key thing with those is, I think, why people are interested, why you said why do people like these books, is because the alternate universe books allow you to have characters, you know, things happen to them that can't happen to them in the quote-unquote, you know, canon titles. So you can have Superman getting old. You can have Robin be a middle-aged senator in yellow tights. You can have all these different things. You know, people die and have different children and all these things that, you know, the editorial on the main Superman book would say, you know, no way.
Did he get to wear the yellow tights in the Senate chambers?
Probably underneath his slacks, I guess. I don't know.
All right. Because I have to say, that would bring some well-needed color to the room.
Well, the adult Robin's costume is, I don't know, not a big fan of that, but... You know, yeah. And that's the thing, the difference, I think, between Marvel and DC and how they've handled these over the years is that DC has always had kind of those parallel universes, and Marvel's pretty much always been limited to the, you know, like the what-if type stories, which are just shoot-offs from very specific events that happen, until we actually got into the Ultimates line, though, which...
Yeah.
Yes and no. They did have a couple way back with Squadron Supreme... or, you know, Squadron Sinister, whatever it was originally called, and stuff like that. They just never did a whole lot with those parallel worlds.
And Age of Apocalypse. I mean, obviously, that was a very good success for a while there until they decided to, you know, basically take every single thing that they made in that universe and all of a sudden say, wait a minute, no, the universe is still around. We can still milk money out of this, of course. You know, but for a while there, that was actually a pretty interesting storyline going on. So that worked pretty well for a while.
Well, this is where we're getting confused because, I mean... To me, I don't necessarily view that as a, or I didn't at the time view it as an alternate universe, just simply because it was part of the main storyline in it.
I gotcha.
Yeah, I was going to say, I see it as an alternate timeline, not a parallel universe.
Okay.
See, now we're getting really nitpicky with all these different
but that's an important distinction at times. Yeah, that's an important distinction at times, because we got to, you know, decide which one is which there. But, Brent, since you're the youngest in the room, I just love saying that. What is your take on the whole parallel universe thing?
I like occasional parallel universe stories, but I think they should be limited to when they're good and have, like, a distinct idea. Like, Dark Knight Returns was the first graphic novel I ever read, and... I think it still is one of the best, obviously, so does everyone else, but I can't believe Marvel had a what-if series for so long, and it didn't die. Like, I think if they were to do it today, it would last, like, 25 issues and then end. Like, the Marvel team-up just ended. It only lasted 25 issues.
Well, so, for a while there, if I remember correctly, the first what-if didn't last nearly as long as the second one.
The first one lasted 47 issues, the second one 130-something, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess one false start, and then finally they caught their rhythm. So I guess you can understand, you know, that it wasn't one straight run. There were multiple what-ifs.
You know, the thing about the what-if books, the ones I only really remember are the ones that were, like the original what-if series, they had the all-humor issue. I think it was, like, number 41.
Yeah.
And when I was first collecting, I sought that out. I thought that was hilarious. At the time, the other one, you know, some of the other ones, though, they're just, like, so ridiculous. You know, like, what if the Marvel bullpen was the Fantastic Four? And you got Jack Kirby, you know, as the Thing and running around beating up people. And the thing about the what if, like I said, it's those books are all keyed off of very specific events. You know, it's always based on a certain storyline. So you have to actually have read the original storyline, I think, to really appreciate those.
Yeah.
Which is a different thing from the Elseworlds or the other books that DC does that are pretty much standalone.
Yeah, and the What If relies on really key, pivotal storylines to really make it worthwhile to do a What If It Went the Other Way storyline.
Yeah, well, I find it interesting. Actually, one of my favorite What Ifs to this day, actually, is what if Wolverine became an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And that one is not the one they would usually expect. If I remember correctly, as opposed to Professor Xavier, you know, getting to Logan first while he was still with Alpha Flight, Nick Fury does. And it changes the entire course of his life. He becomes, you know, one of the head members of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it was a very interesting story to see, you know, exactly what would have happened in his life had he, you know, chosen to say no thanks to, you know, Charles Xavier and got on the route of being, you know, the secret agent type as opposed to being, you know, the guy in the funny tights, which, you know, is definitely a different look for him and a different personality as well. That was pretty fun. But then again, there are the more simple ones. I remember one was, what if Professor Xavier became Juggernaut, which was not nearly as interesting as I thought it was going to be when I picked it up off eBay.
Well, and again, I mean, the What If series, and you, I guess correct me if you think I'm off base, but like a lot of Marvel's ancillary books, usually they were worked on by the B or C list creative teams. I mean, these were the up-and-coming new guys that got assigned to those books a lot of times. So they weren't necessarily the, you know, earth-shattering quality that you might expect.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you're going to take your A-list talent and put them on the books that are in continuity and theoretically matter more, you know, whereas you can try out lesser talents and whatnot on this. Certainly some months it felt like it was just, I don't want to say filler material, but really stretching for a concept for the story.
Yeah, you know, the thing that you said about matter, the things that matter, that was kind of always what stopped me from buying a lot of these books. Is that I always felt that ultimately they didn't really matter to the mainstream continuity.
It's funny, though, because, I mean, whether it, you know, it matters and builds continuity and stuff, that's something that's very important to me. Yet, things like What If, Exiles to a degree, which is another, you know, parallel world-hopping book, those, I love those because while they don't add to the continuity and stuff, it gives you a counterpoint to measure that mainstream continuity against.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, I agree entirely with what you're saying, yet for me it works in a different way, I guess.
And they keep finding pretty interesting storylines to do inside of Exiles. You know, I mean, they haven't really run out of ideas yet, and it's been pretty steady on the creative side as well. Because as of now, well, Chris Claremont's going to be taking over soon, I know that, but Bedard's been on it for about 30 or 40 issues now, and before that it was Winnick's book, and Austin had a small run on that, God forbid, which actually wasn't too bad, mind you, which should probably be a sign for people. Yeah, in my opinion. The Hyperion parts were actually not too bad. When he was actually doing the crossover with the Uncanny X-Men, and no thank you, because that's when he brought in the whole, like, werewolves angle and just completely lost me. But the Hyperion stuff was pretty cool, that much I'll say.
You know, the only time I picked up the Exile book at all was just very recently when they had the new Universal Tour, whatever mm-hmm. they called it, bringing back World a lot Tour. Of those characters again. Yeah. And I know that a lot of people have pretty low opinion of Marvel's new universe, and I don't know, I was just starting to collect comics right when that came out.
Yeah.
Some of those books do have a special place in my nerd heart.
Well, I love seeing Spidey 2099 on the team.
So, I mean, yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I always enjoyed Mark Gruenwald's stuff. I'm
a huge fan of his.
And not too many of the other ones. I read Justice for some reason.
Peter David was on it for
I had
a while,
no idea so. Who Peter David was when I was reading that book.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anyone did. But his writing was you know, solid back then, too.
Until they changed it up and did some weird-ass, you know, it was all a dream kind of stuff in the Justice title, and they totally went off in a different direction.
Well, I think when they did that, that was when Peter David came on, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay. I think so, actually, but I'm not entirely certain. Because I've read a little bit of the history on these guys. Like, I've never actually gone back and read the New Universe stuff, but now that I actually picked up New Universal, I do want to sort of dig through the back issues and see if I can maybe find some of the, especially the Peter David stuff, because, well, anything Peter David is good for me, so I'll have to look back on that. But
well, Brett, I haven't read New Universal yet, but it is kind of funny to be seeing an alternate take on an alternate universe, you know?
Squadron Supreme. It was done with that as well, you know.
That's
Supreme
true,
Power.
But I guess I'm looking forward to New Universal more.
Yeah,
because I, being huge Mark Gruenwald fan, I didn't like them doing a grim and gritty version of what had been a good classic '80s superhero story.
What Brent mentioned before is something that I want to actually bring up here a little bit, and I'll ask Brent first about this. You mentioned Dark Knight Returns in passing before as one of your favorites. What do you think about the guys who try to put stuff like, say, Kingdom Come or Dark Knight Returns into canon in the DC Universe? I mean, are these things that should stay outside of the major universes as parallel universe stories?
Well, I know, like, Brad Meltzer tried to put it in JLA Zero or Justice League Zero, but I kind of liked it better as out of continuity, as something that could happen at any given time. But when you try to force it in there, like, later on we're going to have to try and shoehorn other events into it, and we're going to be questioning this great story, you know, oh, well, how could Dark Knight Returns have happened when, you know, this happened or that happened, you know, stories that were totally written, you know, 20 years after the fact, or maybe even 40, and then I think it lessens the value of the story when you're trying to fit it in with newer continuity that people have just made up.
So it's sort of jury-rigging it into place, you know, it wasn't meant to be that in the first place, and they're sort of forcing things in.
No, I think Dark Knight Returns and stuff like that, or like even Earth-X and Paradise-X, that whole thing, just meant to be a story, a alternate timeline of the Marvel Universe based on events that had happened up until the time when it was published, you know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's an alternate future so much, not necessarily an alternate timeline. And
right.
Like you said, it hinges on the history up until that point.
That's true, yeah. Well, is that something that people should, you know, try to avoid? I mean, just because something is an alternate future doesn't mean it has to be the future. And because of that, when we have, you know, the characters crossing over, like, very heavy in the Superman-Batman arc that Loeb did, they had Kingdom Come Superman show up, and they had in the Kingdom, these, you know, they introduced Hypertime in that, but that's, let's not get into that, but we had the, you know, Kingdom Come characters actually, you know, coming back and meeting their younger selves. I mean, this isn't really stuff that needs to be done. I mean, let the parallel universes and the alternate timelines, you know, stay parallel universes and alternate timelines.
right? And that's always the problem with that kind of thing, is that this is a medium that relies on monthly continuing stories. And to shackle that down by saying, well, you know, in 20 years, it has to turn into Kingdom Come. In 5, 10, 15 years, there's going to be different creators who don't want to do that book anymore. They don't want that kind of future. And you know, like I said, I'd rather that this stuff just be its own entity, you know? I don't need Dark Knight Returns to be some kind of official history, which at this point now it can't be anyway, unless they somehow bring back Ronald Reagan's dead corpse to be president. You know, I mean, that's a book of the 80s, and that's just where it should be.
That could totally happen.
Yeah, well, if the Republicans get their way in the Proposition 412.
Whoa, now.
Ronald Reagan's reanimated corpse will be brought back to life.
Well, it'll be the head in the jars, like in Futurama.
Yeah, there you go.
Life will be simpler that way, I swear. Yeah, I mean, then you run into those problems when you're trying to bring things back like that. Like when Dark Knight Strikes Again was written, not to bring that up for too long because it's Dark Knight Strikes Again, but obviously when you write something that, you know, was originally based in a world that was supposed to be happening in the 80s, and you're trying to make it mean something when you're doing a sequel about 20 years later with a president that's not even president anymore, it's hard to make those changes, you know? Let old stories lie when it comes to, you know, the alternate timelines and all that. Because I'll give you an example here also. J. Michael Straczynski introduced this possible alternate future for Spider-Man a little while back, where we saw him in this, like, jacket-like costume, and Spider-Man saw his death. Well, I guarantee you, once JMS is gone, because JMS isn't even referencing this anymore, we're never going to see this thing again. And this is not going to be his future, because eventually what we consider to be the future will be the present for Spider-Man, and the title's either going to get canceled or it's going to end eventually. You know, that's what's going to happen. Don't try to predict things. Just make them alternate futures and stick with that.
Well, really, what Marvel and DC ought to do is establish that alternate futures are just that, alternate futures, possible futures, and not set in stone. And maybe things are going to play out towards that, but it could veer at any time. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, there's some cool stuff you can do when you do the occasional nod to Kingdom Come or Dark Knight and stuff like that. But yeah, they shouldn't be constrained by that.
I mean, on occasion, it does make sense to perhaps, you know, advance upon the alternate futures because, well, just to give an example of Spider-Girl. Spider-Girl was a throwaway what-if issue. Nobody expected it to catch on nearly as well as it did. To this day, it's one of the best-selling what-if issues of all time. And for a while there, I remember looking in Wizard, and that issue alone was going for about $30, $40 in Wizard's, you know, price guide. I'm sure now it's probably $5, but, well, you know, for a while there, it was very hard to find.
Another thing that's kind of interesting along those lines is if you look at the whole, you know, what do they call it, the MC2 universe with Spider-Girl, Avengers Next, Fantastic Five, all those titles.
J2,
you know, there was an X-Men one. I mean, there were a bunch of them.
Yeah.
If you add up the number of issues of all of those, I mean, most of them, of course, are Spider-Girl or whatnot, but I believe that exceeds the entire, you know, number of issues in that volume of What If.
You're right about that.
So, yeah. I mean, it's arguably more successful than, you know, the series it came out of.
So were they just looking for one to catch it, to like cash in on? I mean, what do you guys think about that?
I think so. I think it was more a matter of let's see, Tom DeFalco's the writer on that, and you know him. It's a good book for him, and it's something they can have him do. It hits an all ages thing. It's got a female protagonist. I mean, it's a win on so many levels. And I think it was more happenstance, not that they were using What If as a let's see if we can launch something.
Right. You know what? The other thing about that, too, is, you know, we talk about future stories. And, I mean, one of the things about future stories is that you can draw on current continuity and show kind of predict what will happen in the future. But the future hasn't been written yet for the mainstream Marvel characters. So you can pretty much, you know, you can do whatever you want. Now, if you set the series in the past, then you are much more constrained as far as what you have to do if you want to try to keep it still in continuity. So, you know, and again, that, to me, that is the only sort of old school 80s feel Spider-Man book that is left anymore.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because it's essentially the Clone Saga, the Next Generation, to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
because so much of what they're building from is off of that series.
It's for people who remember it existed. You know, it's for people who don't shun it out of existence, and that's why I love the book myself, because, like I've said before, that's when I first got into Spider-Man. Around that time was when I first got into Spider-Man, and even though it wasn't the best all the time, it was still what I got to know about Spider-Man. When they just put all these characters to the side and never looked at them again, like the female Dr. Octopus, like Kane, and so on and so forth, I got pissed, you know, because these were characters that I'd grown to know, and at least in Spider-Girl, they're getting referenced and they're getting used. I mean, Brent, do you read Spider-Girl? Have you read it in the past at all?
I've read it in the past, but I don't read it currently, but I think they maybe they continued with it because they did an issue of a what if, and then they decided, you know, this has a lot of story potential because you're not just telling stories about Spider-Man anymore, you're telling stories about new characters. And I think anytime you get new characters into these alternate futures or timelines or anything like that, then I think your potential for story is better than what it is if you're using, like, the original character. Because you're not so tied back. Like, if you had Frank Miller did another Dark Knight or whatever, I hope he doesn't, but he's still limited to what he's done before. Whereas if he used, like, a Robin that became Batman or something, or was Robin in the future, then he can make up all new, like, past histories or whatnot. And just keep going from there instead of having to constantly reference stuff that's already happened.
So it's all about the potential that a story brings, basically.
I think if it has potential, then it should be told or keep it going if it's a good seller. You know, like some of these Marvel ones I enjoyed, but I don't think they should be like continued as series. But which is, I guess, why they've kind of based the newer ones off these events.
Yeah, what do you think about that turn that's happened lately? Especially, we were talking a little bit before we started the show. And I'll bring this up to Matt since we were the ones who were basically having the conversation about how What If is definitely not what it used to be. It's mostly on stuff that happened recently in the world of the Marvel Universe. Is this just so that they can get possibly these new readers that might have picked up the book with that particular arc to read an alternate timeline?
I think that the way that they're doing it sort of makes sense because they're tying a complete storyline or a complete trade paperback arc now, it seems like. So it's not more, you know, like you said before, it used to be these very specific things. Like, what if in issue 175, you know, Spider-Man had gone this way down the road? And I think that you have to be much more of a comic, you know, aficionado to have read those old stories to actually care, you know, why Spider-Man went down the other way down the road to buy the book. And the way that they're doing it now is that they're marketing it with, like you said, a generic title, you know, What If The Other. So if you picked up The Other, if you bought that trade paperback and you see this thing sitting there next to it, it's more general, and I guess maybe you'd be more interested in picking it up. I do find it kind of weird that it asks a question but doesn't really ask a question. So
yeah.
What If The Other? Okay, well, what about it?
What if the other thing happened? There we go. That works. I made it into a question in my head. It's all good. Let's put that on the title. Voila. But I picked up the What If The Other, and it was a lot better than the actual other because it was written by Peter David. And, well, as opposed to Peter David, you know, having to work with, you know, other creators that he might not have possibly wanted to work with, he told a story that was, you know, unique and creative. And, you know, put an interesting take on the whole, you know, what would have happened had Spider-Man chosen a different path during the other. Just to give a little bit of a quick summary here, as opposed to choosing, you know, to accept the spider, he basically takes his spirit guide and says, screw you, you know, sticks a stake through it, and he's stuck in that cocoon. Well, what happens? The symbiote comes along and, you know, basically bonds with his body entirely, and you're left with basically a husk of a man without really a soul. And it's pretty interesting to see just how different Peter would have been, you know, had that change happened. At the same time, though, you're working with the other. You know, I mean, you're working with a piece of material that wasn't really nearly as good as I wanted it to be in the first place. So I guess an alternate story of it would probably just be better automatically for me. I don't know.
I just think it would have been funny if, you know, Mary Jane's arm had been permanently crippled or something.
I was about to say that.
Yeah, what if the writers didn't make obnoxious comments to the readers? I still remember that, you know, stupid-ass winking explanation of why Mary Jane's arm wasn't broken.
Oh, God, I found that
I didn't
so
get
offensive.
The joke until I read it on the internet, what they were referring to, because I didn't notice it when I was reading the other.
okay, explain this for me here, all right, about Mary Jane and the arm. Because okay. I'm not
in one issue, she gets her arm broken. In the next issue of the storyline, which is a different title by a different creative team, it's as if that never happened. It's never referenced. She's fine, etc. So then, I guess it was a month later, a few issues later, whatever, when it hits Straczynski's turn again, or I guess his month of it, whatever.
It was the first Road to Civil War tie-in with Ron Garney. They back-referenced it.
Okay.
They have Peter asking Tony, you know, what happened with this? They basically, in a series of panels on the page, have the question. The next panel is, you know, some lame magic excuse of, oh, you know, I magically fixed it when nobody was looking. The next panel is the two of them kind of looking over the shoulder at the reader, then pause, and then the next panel is, you know, another pause, and then, okay, now we'll move on again.
Yeah, it's kind of like, shut up, stupid fanboys.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I am slightly remembering that now. It was something like Tony said something about like it being some sort of like microfiber polymer that he was able to put on her bone to heal it, and then use nanotechnology or something like that.
And it was it super compressed the thing to where you couldn't even tell she had a cast on, and it was like, come on.
Yes.
I found that so offensive on so many levels. It's not even funny.
Let's have Tony explain why Black Goliath was killed a different way in Civil War Frontline than he was in Civil War.
I'm just waiting for the next round of What If titles to where it's What If Civil War Shipped on Time.
Oh.
Come on, knew I was going to go there.
Civil War number 5, drawn by Pat Lee or something, you know.
Oh, ow. Well, no, not drawn by Pat Lee. Drawn by Pat Lee and his amazing friends.
Speaking of Pat Lee, the arm breaking probably happened in the issue that he drew, so everyone skipped over it. And unless you're really reading it, that's why you remembered it.
By the way, air quotes around he drew, because we all know. We all know. But what were you going to say before, Brent? Before
just that,
John?
Just that, the Pat Lee.
Just that? Thing. Okay.
I was thinking that Spider-Man the Other, I would have liked to see where it would have gone after that, because I was left with an unsatisfactory feeling with it. I mean, I liked it, but I wanted to know what happened next.
Ooh, so how about this? What if Marvel had actually continued on with the plot line of the Other?
Well, there you go.
We have the next What If to happen.
The other thing, let's talk about some of these other ones, because the other What If that just recently came out with dealing with Wolverine, I found that to be ridiculously disturbing for some reason. You know, spoiler alert, I guess, if you are going to read it. Wolverine putting his freaking claws through somebody's feet, cutting off Captain America's arms and legs, sticking his claws through Captain America's head, and then Kitty's hand sort of, like, melding with Wolverine's brain is... I mean, what the hell, man?
You know, you just described every reason I'm glad I didn't get that issue.
It was Wolverine kills the Marvel Universe, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Pretty much.
Which will never be as good as Punisher kills the entire Marvel Universe.
I still have yet to read that.
It's one of the best things I've ever read.
Okay.
It's terrific, and it's simplicity, and it's total mayhem.
If you buy that whole premise that...
Punisher could kill the Marvel Universe?
No. Yeah.
How does he kill Thor?
You want Sergio Aragonés destroy?
Yeah, I like Thor, and actually Fred DC. Hembeck destroys the Marvel Universe.
Oh yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
That was good.
That was my favorite. But I believe that Dave's Longbox guy did some big review on that Punisher destroys
that.
The universe, because the way he describes it, it's not that great. I haven't read it, but if you want to go find out more about the story, go search the archives of Dave's Longbox.
And again, that's Dave's Longbox, not just Bill's Longbox. just to clarify,
totally
that.
Different Longboxes.
Exactly.
Which this one actually really does exist.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or not, no. But
I'm biting my tongue.
Oh, come on, Brent. You get the joke. Let's go on to DC's side. Because when it comes to parallel universes and stuff like that, DC does some very different things.
Doing a lot better, that's why.
Yeah, they do it much different than What If. It's not What If based on, you know, say, a story plot line. It's basically just what if something different happened to the character and, you know, he grew up differently. Or sometimes even the entire DC universe. One of my favorite Elseworlds on Raging Bullets Bullet Points, I reviewed JLA Act of God recently, and it's one of my favorite things, and it basically just is, and I'll use the what if just for the hell of it, you know, what if, out of nowhere, not even sure when it's happening in the DC universe, everybody lost their powers. end of story, you know, and then everybody, you know, basically has to regain their lives and try and go on from there, and it's great stuff.
I'm guessing Batman doesn't have a problem there, huh?
No, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
He's the number one badass in the world now.
Yeah.
Batman and the Beetle.
Oh, come on. He would suck to be the world's greatest detective. Everybody lose their powers. They're hounding you. Where did they go? You're the detective. Find them. It sucks.
Yeah, but you could finally just sit around and say, yeah, who's the top dog now, Superman? Kiss my ass.
Eventually, he just points in one direction and says, they went that way.
Out of my bat cave. That's where.
Well, he actually ended up training a lot of the heroes who lost their powers, who still wanted to be, you know, helping the civilians and all that. And it worked really well to have people like Nightwing, Robin, and Batman, you know, training these people and, you know, teaching them to be heroes even without the superpowers, which was great. But another one of my favorites from a while back is one of the most oddest ones that I've ever read. Okay, I don't even remember what it was called, but it's Superman Ends Up Being Batman. I remember that.
I thought it was Speeding Bullets.
No, that's not it.
Yeah, it is. I think it is.
Is it?
I swear to God.
Let's see. There was the one where Superman became Batman. There was the one where Superman became Green Lantern. There's the one where Superman became just about every other Justice League.
Yeah, I like the one where Superman became Supergirl. It was a tragic farming accident.
All right.
You never read that issue with Ambush Bug of Supergirl, where he goes around the entire time thinking Supergirl is Superman?
Oh, no.
It was hilarious.
Oh, man. Wow.
But not an alternate timeline.
Yeah, this is...
Okay.
I saw it. I found it. Superman Speeding Bullets by J.M. DeMatteis and Eduardo
Barreto.
Oh,
it is Speeding Bullets. Huh.
You're just thinking that because Raging Bullets has everything bullets now.
Well, you know why I'm thinking that? Because of the recent Speeding Bullets that came out that was, you know, not them. But there you go. Okay, so it was called Speeding Bullets. Okay.
DC doesn't find out about their podcast and shut them down for all their names.
Oh, I hope not. But
no, if they do, have them call me. I'll give DC an earful.
Right. But, no, the best thing about Speeding Bullets was that, you know, pretty much he lands in Gotham and ends up becoming Batman. And eventually, you know, of course, because it's one of those stories where, you know, eventually he ends up becoming Superman, whatever. But it's interesting seeing how different Batman would have turned out had he had powers. And, you know, he's still got a lot of the Batman detective thing going on, but, you know, he could be super fast, he'd be super strong, and doesn't have to worry about a lot of the things that Batman has to worry about, you know, about, like, you know, spraining a knee or something like that.
Now, I haven't read that story, so I can't really comment on it, but to me, if Bruce Wayne had powers, why would he have done all that stuff? Why would he have bothered to train himself and do all that kind of stuff if he had the ability to destroy a building or, you know, X-ray vision? I mean, you don't really need to... Yeah. Do any detective work, you can just fly over the city and eavesdrop on everybody.
Well, it's still about control. I mean, Bruce Wayne with no powers, it's about controlling his anger so that he doesn't kill the punk on the street that he's beating the crap out of. And if he's Superman, then it's about controlling his powers for the same reason, so he doesn't kill the punk he's beating the crap out of.
Well, and it's along the lines of what if Superman had been raised as it, you know, through the same set of experiences and household and stuff as Bruce Wayne had been.
Mm-hmm.
So you wind up with the same basic, you know, it's nature versus
same
nature
character.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, aren't like 95% of all the Elseworld books, what if Superman was born somewhere else?
Far too many of them are.
Yeah.
Well, JLA Nail was great. And another Nail, for that matter.
What happens in those?
Superman doesn't make it to Earth, essentially.
No. It's actually not that. That's a common misconception.
The Nail... You want to go ahead?
Okay, well, pretty much the Nail stops Martha and Pa Kent from actually getting to the crash site. And pretty much, this isn't really giving away much, but Superman grows up Amish.
Huh.
Yep.
There's complete silence.
What else can
you
say?
Amish don't have microphones.
Yes. Well, that's a reveal that happens a little later on, but he spends most of his life on, you know, with the Amish, and because of that, doesn't, you know, ever really decide to go to Metropolis and never become Superman. So JLA is without Superman. They turn out very, very differently, and it's a very different world. And it's very fun story, and it's Alan Davis art, so you can't go wrong.
And unlike a lot of those single-issue what-ifs, I mean, the Elseworlds have always been a higher-priced prestige format kind of series. A lot of times they do have bigger name creators that are put on the titles. My personal favorite, actually, is the John Byrne Generations series.
Those are pretty good. I loved those, yeah.
And that's the same thing. The reason why I said before why we like these alternate universes is that the characters age, we see, like, the different... You know, the premise of that series is basically, okay, imagine that Batman and Superman existed at when they did in the real world. So Superman came around in 1939, you know, Batman came around
treat it like
right
a period
after that.
Piece. Yeah.
Right, and then the thing is that, assume that that was when they first came out and that they aged from that point forward. So in the 50s, then Superman's, like, in his 50s, and then he retires and he has a super son who takes over, or... You know, something like that. It's just sort of interesting, and it goes forward, you know, like, pretty far into the future. It shows these different, yeah. You know, the different third, fourth generation of, you know, Superman family characters, Batman family characters. So really an interesting take on that whole thing. And, you know, that's part of the reason why people always bitch, and they want to see characters get killed. They want things to happen. They want changes in the status quo. And those books can give us those changes, you know, albeit temporarily.
Well, was it Secret Society of Secret Society of Heroes? Was that what it was?
Secret Society of Superheroes,
like
yeah.
There we go. Secret Society of Superheroes with Mike McCone art was something similar along those lines, where, you know, all the characters age and all that, because Superman is, you know, a little boy, and eventually I think it's taking place at about 98 or 99 or something like that, and he's got, you know, the gray hair. He's got a similar motif to what he looks like in Kingdom Come, only, you know, he's the head of this, you know, Secret Society of Superheroes, so he turns out really differently there as well, but he is aging and realizes that, you know, his time might be up, which is pretty interesting to see out of a superhero, you know, when they realize that they might not be as important to the whole scheme of things as they used to be. Not something you see in every story. John, what are some of your favorites?
Again, I really liked the JLA-JSA crossovers. I loved a lot of the Earth 2 stuff that Roy Thomas did, both with All-Star Squadron and Infinity Inc. For anyone who hasn't read the early issues of Exiles over at Marvel from Judd Winnick, I really recommend those.
Okay.
I think part of why the series is still around today is the solid foundation he created back then.
Definitely, yeah. What about Elseworlds-wise? Any particulars that pop out in your head?
The ones we talked about, The Nail, you know, Secret Society of Superheroes. I mean, there were a lot of really good ones, but none that just, you know, leap out of an, oh, you know, I've really got to read and reread that, you know, time and time again. I'd have to say probably... And again, it certainly doesn't qualify as an Elseworlds or whatever, but, you know, one of my favorite parallel world stories is JLA Avengers, you know, and talk about the ultimate in terms of parallel, you know, divergent worlds or whatever.
Sure.
You know, played up the differences between the two universes, each had a rich history, they merged them well. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
That brought up a whole other path that we haven't really talked about. Since you mentioned JLA Avengers, I'll throw out one of my favorite books from when I was early collecting in the 80s was the X-Men Teen Titans, Walt Simonson art, Dark Phoenix, Darkseid team up against the two hottest books basically at the time. And I loved the hell out of that book. Now, other titles, maybe not so successful, we have our Amalgam Universe.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
No, I was thinking, there's some interesting ideas there. Are there any of those series, anything that came out of that we actually want to see again in any way?
Well, actually, along those lines, what I'd like to see now, going back to your comment of the X-Men Titans, you know, the two top teams at the time, I'd love to see some kind of a crossover between Astonishing X-Men and the new Justice League.
Mm. I mean,
both of those are very strong books with very strong creative teams. And that could be, you know, a fun crossover. I mean, we're not going to see it, of course. There's too many company politics. But that could be a lot of fun.
Just like we'll never see that Daredevil-Batman crossover that Bendis wanted to do because of DC politics. So, what are you going to do? But that would be something that I would really love to see, though. Daredevil-Batman crossover.
Bendis writing
of
Batman?
Yeah.
Can he do it?
That's
wouldn't he be talk a
that,
lot?
That's the question. I don't know. I'm curious to see whether or not he'd be able to pull it off. But he had wanted to do it. But this whole long story between DC and Marvel, all about brewing why it'll probably never happen. But who knows? Amalgam wise, though, I would like to see more Thor Ryan. That would be fun. Having Judge John Romita Jr. draw that again.
Hands down, would be the one to get.
Mm. That one was really good. Yeah, I love Bizarnage.
Yeah, I mean, it's what I'm saying. It's kind of funny or sort of humorous. I don't know if that stuff is very self-sustaining. It's just a little too much, I guess. Too complicated.
I think they could turn it into a successful ongoing series that just kind of explored that merged world if you had the right writer.
Sure.
And really, aside from somebody like, you know, maybe a Kurt Busiek, Mark Waid, but really the person I would think would be the right fit for it would be Peter David.
Sure. Oh, without a doubt. That would be fantastic, because, correct me if I'm wrong, did he write Spider-Boy?
Ooh, I thought Carl Kessel was involved, but he might have been on the art side. Honestly, I don't remember.
I think Peter David did the DC versus Marvel crossover that spawned the Amalgam thing. He wrote half of it.
At least part of that.
Okay. Okay. That might be what I'm thinking of. Okay. Yeah, because there were pretty fun things that came out of that. I remember Challengers of the Fantastic was pretty fun, and that was the second Amalgam thing that came out, because I remember that they continued the Amalgam books past the actual DC versus Marvel event. The second time that they did like that All-Axis or whatever it was with the Axis character, it came out with more Amalgamated, and Iron Lantern. I remember that one was hit or miss.
Some of those were a lot of fun. I personally thought a couple of them where it's like, okay, that's a bit of a stretch. Or they were tossing in too many characters and it was all glitz and glamour but no substance sort of a thing. But again, you've got a one-shot. How much can you really do in that? It was fun for what it was. I certainly would not be opposed to seeing more of that. But, you know, flip side, you also occasionally get things like the Tangent Universe, where all they do is keep the names and flip everything else.
Yeah, who here is a fan of the Tangent Universe? Because I liked a couple of things that came out of that.
I don't think I read any of those, to tell the truth.
Yeah. I like the Green Lantern.
Well, and then they obviously dropped hints about that character coming back into the mainstream DC Universe.
It's definitely coming back. If you read the most recent Ion. Yeah. That at least the Lantern is. I don't know about whether or not the actual Tangent Green Lantern is coming back, but her Lantern is definitely there.
Well, like one of the, I think it's number 10, the cover to 10 has a bunch of Tangent characters on it or something.
I'm wondering if we're going to see any of the Stan Lee Presents, or Just Imagine Stan Lee, actually.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that was pretty cool, too.
I remember liking the Superman.
The Green Lantern, where he was like an Earth hero, he's kind of like Captain Planet. But he came. Yeah. He got his powers from a tree. Sounds really whacked out, but I liked it.
But it was a really cool tree.
I read it and it was awesome. It just glowed.
It was a birch. It was a birch. Of course, you gotta watch out for those birch trees. They might give you powers. I don't know. Stanley imagining the DC universe, things would have turned out damn different had he done things.
Oh no!
From what I know about that, yeah. And it would be interesting actually going back to the well on that, you know, if he ever did want to, you know, milk a little more out of that series. It would be pretty fun to see, you know, perhaps a little more in that universe. Because I remember the JLA of that was also pretty cool, you know, because that was everybody all together. The Flash, I remember, came out of that.
Speed Racer Flash.
Wonder Woman.
That's what she looked like.
Yeah, Speed Racer Flash. Exactly. What else was there? Wonder Woman, Spider-Man,
Batman,
Superman.
Batman actually looked like a bat.
Yeah. They had some cool stuff.
Did you read the Batman? Because that was the one that I
read all of them.
Okay. And how was Bat as Batman?
I liked it. You know, part of it is it's Stan Lee. So, you know, you're going to have some of his style shining through in anything he writes. That's part of his charm. You know, I think if we had gotten this sort of a thing, you know, from Stan Lee back around the time he was creating the Marvel Universe, we'd have gotten totally different stuff. But what it was great. It was a lot of fun.
Now that we have the Earth 2 sort of back in canon with the DC Universe, even if it's not around, do you expect to see more, quote-unquote, untold tales of Earth 2 perhaps sprouting up and maybe, like, annuals or something along those lines? Because, obviously, this is alternate universes that can be explored in DC, because even if it's not happening now, there are plenty of stories that could be told with the original versions of these characters.
It would
be pretty fun.
I suspect we're not going to see a whole lot of that, because remember, one of the reasons they got rid of the parallel worlds was it was too confusing for readers. It's like, I don't buy that anyways.
I wish they would actually go back to that whole thing, because it just makes so much more sense. You know, you have a specific universe where you have, you know, certain types of stories that can be told. And the way that they have it right now, like I said, every single DC character is forced to exist in the same universe, and they don't all belong to that same.
Well, I mean, your earlier point
universe
about the Shazam Captain Marvel is an excellent one. They've been floundering trying to figure out a role and a position for him in the mainstream universe, whereas you're right, if they put him back on Earth-S or an equivalent, and he's the hero on that Earth with his, you know, surrounding characters, etc., you know, it's much easier to get a series going around that sort of a status quo versus him just being another Superman type.
And then you can have it again as just a standalone book with its own continuity. Doesn't tie into any other, you know, and if you want to do a crossover, you know, Superman goes through the barrier of the universe and comes over to
the
see
whole
him.
Rock
and
of Eternity gets him there or whatever,
Yeah, there you go. And the other, you know, there's other stuff too, and that's the thing I really do now that I'm an older kind of reader, I really wish that we had that Earth 2, those stories back again, because I think that there's something, you know, as much as I like the Justice Society and the way that it is now, they just belong in that World War II genre for me, I guess.
Yeah.
I just would die to have a book that was set in that time period with these characters that could explore that, I think. And I sort of, you know, like I said, I feel the loss of the multiverse, to tell you the truth.
Oh, yeah.
I would actually like to see a World War II-based JSA roaming around in the comic book world, you know, at least more of their exploits from the World War II era, because we don't see that many World War II-based books anymore, and it's a rich era.
Well, World War II is not really, it's still relevant, but, you know, a lot of people alive today, like, I only know World War II through the History Channel, and
well, look at how well the Call of Duty and all those games sell. Come on.
Yeah,
World War
II's
hot.
But well, it's hot with the first-person shooters, but there's, like, the people that lived it or her parents lived it are getting older and older, and I think as time goes on, it's going to be like the War of 1812. I mean, how much do you know about that? Certainly, it's going to happen a lot further down the line and not as quickly as that, but I don't know. I think that's why you haven't seen anything like that.
It happened in 1812.
Well, it's interesting because Anthem over at Hero Publishing, which is by Roy Thomas, is a World War II thing, and it's essentially an alternate take on kind of what he would have done had he continued either with the Invaders over at Marvel or All-Star Squadron at DC. Because what he thought about doing for those, and it would have worked for either, really, was have, you know, if it was the Invaders, you know, kill off Cap, or if it was the All-Star Squadron, kill off, you know, the Jay Garrick Flash, or somebody who we knew lived past that, and then instantly established that this is now an alternate timeline, all bets are off. You know, now he's doing it with a complete new set of characters, etc., so it doesn't have quite the same,
right,
you know, resonance.
That sort of defies the whole point, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, all you have to do is just suspend belief and say, you know, that's Captain America, that's Namor,
that's
Human
Torch. Just doesn't work. And that's we get that a lot. We always get the analogs of the main characters, but it's not the same thing as actually seeing the real characters. And that was, again, for me, that was kind of the draw of the whole All-Star Squadron series, was that these were characters that you knew, but, you know, they were aging, they were getting old, they could die, different things could happen to them.
And it was a period piece. It was a cross between a superhero book and a war comic. You know, it was a very interesting book for its time and continues to be somewhat unique. But going back to the point you were just making, Matt, about the analogs, I mean, that's one kind of, you know, parallel world or alternate timeline story we haven't really discussed too much, and that's one where we simply have very clear-cut counterparts to established characters, mm-hmm. almost for the sole purpose to where they can do things to these characters that they can't do with the quote-unquote real versions. I mean,
the Authority.
I was going to say the classic example really is Watchmen, you know. But
and so, also, like we said before, Squadron Supreme, obviously.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Both the Grimwald series and the current one.
Well, I think that they are alternate realities for a reason. I mean, obviously, if you were to take those Fawcett characters or something like that and say, you know, stick them in a world where, you know, it's like World War VII and, you know, everybody's all to hell, or, you know, if you were to take those Charlton Comics characters and, you know, have some of the stuff that happened in Watchmen happen to them, actually, well, for one thing, we'd be out a couple Charlton characters. Oh, wait a minute, that happened anyway. But,
I was just saying.
They're all dead already. But, you know, I don't know, because to me that, you know, as much as I enjoyed Watchmen, I think I probably would have enjoyed it more if it would have had those characters, to tell you the truth.
Maybe I don't think it would have made a damn bit of difference to most readers.
Well, not to most people, but I think to me, again, it would be real characters with the real history. I think it would have had a slightly better impact on...
I mean, I hear what you're saying, I agree with what you're saying, but I guess my question is, at that point, did you really know who Blue Beetle was, who Captain Atom was? Because those characters, they hadn't seen the light of day for quite some time.
Right. I think the first reappearance of all those characters during the Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yeah, they show up in, like, mm-hmm. the first issue. There was a DC Comics Presents or something that had Captain Atom and one or two others. But, I mean, they were definitely being pulled out of you know, publishing limbo.
Right. I mean, and to tell you the truth, I read that series when it first came out in trade paperback. I think that was, like, 86 or something. So I was, like, 15 at the time. And, yeah, I really didn't have any idea about who these Charlton characters were. as an older reader now, I think, like I said, I would appreciate it more. But at the time, yeah, I had no idea.
Well,
yeah,
I think fair. that had DC had that license for Charlton a couple more months or possibly even a year longer than it had at the point where Alan Moore was putting together Watchmen, then we probably would have seen the Charlton characters in that.
No,
because they had just
it wasn't about licensing. They wanted to keep them in. They wanted to bring them into the DC universe. With
they
Crisis.
Owned the characters flat out, and that's why we got the analogs, so they could hang on to Blue Beetle and use them later.
I got you. Okay, all right. So they just felt that they could milk it more if they, you know, actually kept the characters in their own universe.
But going to the, if they kept the rights longer, they might have kept publishing longer. I mean, that brings up the whole Impact line of comics that DC essentially licensed the characters from Archie for a while.
You know, I really liked that. I really liked a lot of those books.
Oh, it had some
especially
great
the
stuff.
Mike Parobeck Fly series.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one in particular. I think he was a huge, you know, talent.
That one was actually a bunch of characters that Alan Moore originally thought of using for Watchmen, so go figure.
Yeah, again, it was a bunch of, you know, otherwise limbo characters, you know, that weren't getting used.
I guess I always get a kick out of lesser-known superhero universes. Like, I get a kick out of the Charlton characters and the Archie or the MLJ characters. It's kind of fun, I don't know. It's interesting to see those characters brought back. But well, again, like I said, they don't all fit into the mainstream DC universe.
Yeah.
Brent, what about you? I mean, would that have changed your appreciation of something like, say, Watchmen, if they'd actually used characters that were already established?
I appreciated Watchmen, but I've only read it once, so I don't know if I could say that. I read it, and I thought those were actual characters that existed, and then I went and researched it. See, I thought he made up those characters to begin with, and that they were kind of like Superman, like Batman analogs, and then someone said they're analogs of the Charlton characters, and I had to find out who they were. So, really, it would not have made a difference, because when I read it, I didn't know who they were either.
I think it would have weakened Watchmen, personally.
Yeah, he can do more stuff because they're totally different. They're based off characters.
He can establish the baggage of the characters versus having it, you know, brought to it.
True, but I mean, even at the, but like you said, at the time, they're really, most people that were going to read that book, they wouldn't be aware of the baggage. They wouldn't have read those comics, really, probably anyway.
Yeah, but I think at some point when they found the baggage later, I mean, yeah, I'm contradicting myself, and you caught me entirely on that.
Well, I wasn't trying to bust you, but I just
but you
think,
should. You're right. I think part of it is you can do anything you want with Night Owl because he has no existence outside of Watchmen, really.
Right.
If you'd done the exact same stuff with Blue Beetle, a lot of the readers at the time, certainly I wouldn't have known anything about the character. You know, but then later, had I learned more about it, had I gotten to like it, and had I thought, oh, they took this character with decades of history and did, you know, whatever to it, you know, that might have, you know, soured me on it. So having it as a self-contained, you know, kind of isolated bubble or whatever, I think works to its benefit.
Yeah, you had to wait for Infinity Crisis for that to happen.
Well, it would have, Watchmen would have been totally different if Night Owl was like Blue Beetle like he was originally. I mean, he wouldn't have been as sad or downtrodden. He might have been like happy-go-lucky, and that would have changed the whole thing.
Oh, of course, without a doubt. Yeah, it's, I mean, mind you, knowing Alan Moore, he probably would have just, you know, put a different spin on the character in the first.
Well,
place.
Well, I think they played. I mean, I think they, you know, and I didn't read this series. I'm just going on stuff I've overheard on the schoolyard. But wasn't for a while, like in Birds of Prey, that's Ted Kord was basically Night Owl. He was a pudgy.
Well, that was back
sack.
In some of the Justice League stuff with the Giffen de Mateus era. But I think part of where it really would have hurt Watchmen is it would have changed the discussion from look at what he did to these counterparts to these characters to, oh my God, look at what he did to these characters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think DC made the right decision at that point to hang on to Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, Nightshade, Peacemaker, you know, all these other characters. Now, whether they've used them well or not since then is another issue entirely, but they've kept them around to be used since then.
Right, but you know what, the thing though with that is, again, this is Watchmen was a totally self-contained project that would really have no bearing on them using those characters in the mainstream DC universe. I mean, it was a totally alternate world, and if they would have shown up in Crisis just like they had in, you know, in the real world, it still wouldn't have made really any difference.
I think it would have influenced fans' opinions.
I think so too, actually, to tell you the truth. But which actually makes me think of, you know, just how different some of the classic stories like Batman, you know, Dark Knight Returns would have been had, you know, it would have been a Batman analog as opposed to Batman, and just how less it would have actually meant if that would have been the case. So, you know, some stories benefit from it being an analog. Other stories would have definitely not nearly as been as powerful had they been forced to use an analog.
Oh, totally.
So
totally. I agree with that.
It's all about, you know, what the story is.
If it had been, you know, Stormy Knight Returns versus Dark Knight or something, you know, it would have been completely.
Is that a gay porn flick?
No, let's not go
like
there.
That
all right,
galloping again.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Nighthawk Returns. You're not down with that?
Nah. Darkened Knight Returns wouldn't have been nearly as good as Dark Knight Returns. So, but and then again, also, you know, Kingdom Come. Had Kingdom Come been a whole bunch of characters, you know, like
yeah,
had it been Awesome Dude instead of Superman,
well, half
it
of
would
it
have
was.
Been really ruined.
I mean, half
because
well, the characters
newer
in there
characters.
Were essentially riffs
legacy
on the whole
characters.
Image style. Yeah. They may not have been direct analogs, but they were very clearly thematically based on, you know, the Youngblood, the, you know, the that era of comics.
But they weren't really the main characters in the book, you know?
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
Yeah.
If it wasn't Superman, I don't think it would have been as meaningful to have, you know, Uberman return or something like that. Because you wouldn't have known the history of the character and how great a guy he was.
If it had been Supreme versus Superman, who would have cared?
Yeah.
I agree entirely.
Exactly. And by the way, I love the use of the word Uber there. Uber is one of my favorite words.
Have you seen the Ben Affleck movie about George Reeves?
No.
Hollywood
no,
Land. It's really good, but when they were filming it, they didn't have the rights to use the name Superman. So I'm thinking, I could be wrong, but they were going to call him Uberman in the film. That would have been totally bad.
Well, I remember seeing like a clip from the trailer where they showed him in the Superman suit with no S on it.
Yeah, and he would have just have like no S, but I'm glad they got the Superman rights, but it's a great movie, so go.
Well, see, they should have just called him Uberman.
Uberman?
Yeah, Uberman. That way everybody says like, did they say Superman, or was that Uberman?
They
nah, it was probably Superman.
They should have gotten the rights to Supreme from Liefeld and just gone with the S.
I actually prefer the old Kurtzman, Super Duper Man. They could have gone with that too.
Well, speaking of Liefeld, actually, just to mention this quickly in passing here.
Really cool.
I mean, you talk about parallel universes. You talk about you know, like the Heroes Reborn, Heroes Return type stuff, and you know how it didn't work for me. That whole thing, you know, was all based on the fact that, you know, sure, they were the characters we knew and all that, but I think it would have worked better for me had it just been the characters we knew as opposed to the characters we knew. You know, if it had just been alternate takes on them, that could have very well been the first Ultimate Universe.
Well,
had
it was the first attempt at Ultimates.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a sideline, it was a replacement. Rubbed people the wrong way. And just, again, the creative team problems and delays and everything else.
Were those good? Like, and what's the deal with, is it an alternate take or is it just like a retelling?
No, it was a replacement. Basically, those four or five books, Captain America, what was it? Captain America, The Avengers,
Captain America, Avengers,
Fantastic Four,
and
all the
Iron
main
Man,
core yeah. titles basically ceased to exist, and they were replaced by these new versions. And the truth of the matter is, the books really, you know, they were in a slump, and they did need something, you know, Marvel thought they needed to kind of rekindle their mainstream titles, and what better way to do that than to give them to the Image guys who had sold millions of copies of their crappy books. And unfortunately just kind of didn't, you know, it didn't work, didn't take off.
But was it like different, or was it just like tweaked a little bit, like their origin?
It was some cases a little bit more, some cases a little bit less.
Yeah, just the only difference is that they were the characters we knew, just placed in a different setting, and that's the problem. You know, had it been just alternate takes on them, then who knows what would have happened. But it was those very characters.
Yes and no, because those characters did not remember having been in the mainstream universe. So in that respect, it was very much the dry run for the Ultimate line.
Right, but like I said, the key difference there is that you didn't have a choice as a reader. If you wanted a Captain America book, you couldn't pick between the two. You had to take the Liefeld version.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I do like, though, that the relationship between DC and Marvel must have been better at that time, because I remember when Reed went to the edge of the negative zone and saw all the, you know, parallel universes, one of them had a picture of Batman sitting on top of a rooftop in Gotham City.
Well,
they should
do that.
It was very apparently
cool.
Him. Yeah. But the thing is, it all depends on whether or not DC and Marvel like each other at the time. because chances are that wouldn't even happen now, because they're still like having their silly feuds over certain things. So,
but that, you'd think that DC would allow them to do that if it's just one panel of Batman, because that's cross promotion. That's them not having to do anything. That's the other company doing it for them.
That's them not protecting their intellectual property, and if you do that enough times, you risk losing it. So I understand why they don't do that.
Yeah. There was a Superman shirt, I remember very clearly, that showed up in an issue with Spider-Man back in the 90s. And it was at the same time where, I think about an issue or two later, there was a very obvious Clark Kent who said something along the lines of, I'm never going on vacation again, when he's standing there watching Spider-Man have a fight with some villain.
A lot of that stuff is, I mean, it depends on how you do it, because, you know, obviously you could have a parody, you could have a big guy in glasses and hint at it,
there's,
as long as you don't show the ass
deniability.
And that's the same thing. You think of, like, again, how Squadron Supreme didn't get sued out of existence, I don't know. You know, the fact that Shazam or Captain Marvel was supposed to, they claim, was infringing on Superman, and then somehow the Squadron Supreme is not infringing on the JLA. I don't really know how that works.
Okay, two words: the Whizzer. Enough said.
Well, I think to a degree there's a I don't want to say a gentleman's agreement between the two companies, but Marvel and DC will agree on certain things, and not to go sue each other into oblivion is, I think, one of them. I mean, they co-own the rights and the trademark, whatever, the term superhero.
So, I mean,
they've got to play nice with each other to a degree. They don't have to actually be nice to each other, but they can't have open hostilities. It's just counterproductive for them.
I remember reading not that long ago in a Comic Book Urban Legends Revealed column that back in the day there were actually unofficial crossovers between the Avengers and JLA, where there was, in the same month, if I remember correctly, you know, a fake JLA showed up in the Avengers and a fake Avenger showed up in the JLA, and they had their quote-unquote crossover.
Well, and a couple of those actually wound up joining the Justice League later. If you remember, what was her name? Silver Sorceress, Blue Jay, I forget who the others were, but yeah. I mean, that was an easy way to... You create analogs of the other one, you both do it at the same time, it's kind of a wink-wink, nudge-nudge kind of a crossover.
Wink-wink, nudge-nudge, say no more. Would you like to see a monthly anthology? Obviously, What If was that back in the day, but I mean, would you like to see something return along the lines of a What If in Marvel, or better yet, even like an Elseworlds anthology with a rotating cast of artists and writers in DC? I mean, would that appeal to you if done properly?
Well, one of the ideas I thought DC should have done like 25 years ago was essentially, you know, picture this for a cover. You've got a clear, you know, Earth and stuff, and it's just got a big question mark on it. And the title of the book is Earth question mark. And it would essentially have been an Exiles kind of a thing through the multiverse.
Hmm.
I think that would have been a lot of fun.
I get what he's saying. Yeah.
Kind of a which Earth did we land on now?
Exactly, yeah. Oh, we're on Earth 57Q, okay.
So, like, each new issue would be a different Earth?
Not necessarily each new issue, each new story arc or whatever. You'd want to have something to draw readers across the story arcs and issues. You could have taken a character similar to Pariah, or even Pariah himself, although he didn't exist at the time, whose power is essentially to get sucked to the absolute wrong place at the wrong time. Use that as a story, you know, arc or whatever. But something where you explore, you know, this is just a totally different take on either the DC universe or a DC universe or just a parallel world. But, you know, I thought that would have worked 25 years ago, you know, pre-crisis, etc., back when you had the multiverse. Quite frankly, I'm astounded and pleasantly surprised that Exiles is still going. But again, you've got a stable team of characters by and large. Would I like to see an anthology series on this sort of thing? No, I don't believe in anthology series. They're impossible
to
order. Go ahead.
The other thing I was just going to say, when you were talking about the Exiles-style book and surprised that it's still existing, you know, I agree, and I think that one of the reasons why is that Marvel's never really had as broad of a history of multiverses or alternate universes. DC has a much richer history of those kind of alternate Earths that could be explored in a similar style series.
I agree, but it's funny because you look at where Marvel and DC started at and where they're at now. You know, certainly pre-crisis, DC had a couple of titles and backup features that took place on Earth 2. They had an established secondary world that was an ongoing concern.
Right.
You know, Marvel just had the Marvel Universe and that was it. Sure, it had other things they could go to from time to time, but nothing that was, you know, around on a monthly basis. Now, here we are, 25 years later, whatever. We have Marvel having, you know, this parallel world of ongoing titles known as the Ultimate stuff. Hell, you've even got, you know, the Exiles bouncing around. You've got the Squadron Supreme stuff. You could argue you've got two or three other continuities between the Marvel Adventures and all that kind of crap or whatever.
And the MC2 universe.
And MC2, exactly.
And don't forget The End. The End, also, yeah, which has been coming out lately.
Less, that's before The End, Hulk The End. That's more different worlds than ongoing, but still, same idea. You know, they've got a richer tapestry to be going on, more of a multiverse, and DC has the universe. I mean, it's really funny how they flipped on that, and I'm not sure which one came out the better. I think there's
Well, I've never bought that idea that it's too complicated for people to understand.
Oh, I bought the idea. I just totally disagreed with it.
Right. I mean, separate universes for separate titles, it's very easy to understand.
Of course, yeah. I mean, well, there's a reason why there's a Wildstorm universe and a DC universe. I mean, even though they bought the rights to Wildstorm, you know, to bring those characters over to the DC universe, other than maybe for like, a 5 or 10 issue arc or something like that, would be silly. Absolutely silly. And that's why Captain Atom eventually came back to the DC universe. That's why eventually Mr. Miracle, whatever
Mr.
his name
Majestic.
Is, Mr. Majestic.
Whole different story.
Exactly. Mr. Majestic, you know, made his way back to the Wildstorm universe eventually, because these are two separate universes. You know, characters might cross over every now and then, but that's it. But just to mention something about the Exiles quickly, you just mentioned about how, you know, DC had all their established worlds and all that. What I find the most intriguing about Exiles is the fact that for about 40 or 50 issues out of its run, they didn't go to any universes that were already established in the DC universe. I mean, in the Marvel universe, except for that one arc with Uncanny X-Men. That's it. Every alternate reality they visited was a brand new take and a brand new reality.
Yeah, but
until eventually we got Spider-Man 2099 and all that.
Ooh, vampires took over the world, or lizards took over the world,
or zombies.
Yeah, but they were but there still never were any of the pre-established ones until now, where we've got, you know, Spider-Man 2099 on the team, and, you know, they went to Mojo World eventually. But for a while there, it was all new stuff, which was shocks me that it survived as long as it did. I'm happy it has, but there you go.
Again, I go back to, it had a very solid foundation from day one with the early Judd Winnick issues. Anyone who hasn't read that really and likes the series really ought to go pick that up, those trades.
Definitely, without a doubt. Especially those first about 12 or 13 issues or so were absolutely fantastic. You know, it's still great today.
I actually just bought the first trade of that a couple months ago, and one of the reasons why I kind of got lost a little bit down on the way is that it seemed like it relied very heavily on the whole Age of Apocalypse storyline, which I never read. I just didn't have any stake in those characters, I guess, is what I...
When it first starts off, the only one that's from Age of Apocalypse is Blink. I mean, it's Morph, but it's not the Age of Apocalypse Morph. It looks a little bit like him, that's it. In fact, it looks exactly like him, but it's not that Morph. So, you've only got one character from Age of Apocalypse.
Right, but just... I don't know.
And it doesn't
really
go on
their history.
They're
all stories I didn't read before, I guess.
Yeah, and that's fair. But it was well-written, excellent art, so, good stuff.
Friend, what was your... I know you had a flat-out no on the anthology. Well, why a flat-out no?
Anthology, like, that's when we're having multiple titles in, like, one book, right?
Yeah, something like that, or something along the lines of, say, you know...
The solo series,
something
like
that.
Where they switch creative teams and features and stuff. It's something that lacks, essentially, a stable... It's got a rotating feature and creative team versus a steady... you know, single focus or whatever.
Well, that might work if they did one book and did that, but, like, why didn't they do that with, like, Superman Chronicles and Batman Chronicles or the Confidentials rather than what they're doing now? You know, you could have a steady stream of Batman Elseworlds, or just call it DC Chronicles or something, and that might actually work, but I would think that you would get tired after a while. Like, the thing that keeps Exiles going along is because you have characters to latch on to every time you open the book. Whereas if you had a DC one, or like if DC did it, they would probably have a new world every time, and you have to readjust and get used to new characters.
But that was What If, and What If lasted about more than 100 issues.
Mm. But that's also the exception that proves the rule, though, to a degree, because how many other anthology books really have been out there, and been out there recently, that have survived for any length of time? True. And most of them are going to either have a regular creative team, be it just the writer like Rob Kirkman on Marvel Team-Up, or you're going to have completely rotating stuff like you did on Solo, and it was lucky to last a year, even though it was, you know, critically acclaimed.
Or my favorite, the Unlimited books in the Marvel Universe that nobody even knew were still coming out.
Well, I mean,
X-Men Unlimited. The X-Men Unlimited and Spider-Man Unlimited, they came out for about, 10 years? And yeah. I think I had thought that they were canceled about 3 years into it. And yet they still came out.
The ones we were seeing recently were totally different volumes than the old ones. They've reused the name at least twice.
I gotcha. All right.
I have a question. The problem with those is they're impossible to order because you've got no continuity. They're going to bounce up and down in sales all over the place. Again, why Exiles works is you've got the team to latch on to as a reader to get hooked.
And that's why an Elseworlds anthology would not work.
An Elseworlds could work, but not an anthology one.
Okay.
You know, if you had a character or a stable character or something to pull you from issue to issue, from world to world...
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole Quantum Leap thing. You've got Sam and Al, and it was their relationship in that TV series that kept the viewers coming back. You know, you can get around that issue if you've got something like that.
That's in essence what Exiles is. It's Sliders meets Quantum Leap.
Agreed, but it's totally different than let's take a whole string of Elseworld titles, put them on under an umbrella, name, and just do them as subsequent issues.
I gotcha. All right, well, you live and learn, I guess, because I would be, I guess, the minority in the room that would actually want to pick up a rotating, sort of anthology Elseworlds book that really didn't have any sort of anchor to it, because I like variety and I like alternate realities, so for me, I guess I'd be that niche market that would, pick it up, and I'd be that one person who always, goes into the store and picks it up, and they'd order two copies.
Well, don't get me wrong, I'd probably get it, too. But,
Of course, but you get everything, John. Yeah. you get everything, except for Wildstorm, so...
Yeah. Well, and I dropped the MC2 stuff.
Oh, okay.
They relaunched Spider-Girl, and I said, okay, bye-bye.
That was your ticket out the door.
Yeah. I needed a lame excuse. They gave me one.
Yeah, so, Matt, you are against, say, like, Elseworlds anthology,
well,
right?
You know what? I was just thinking about this again, because, like I said, I'm not a big, huge... reader of a book like Exiles, but DC has done so many Elseworlds universes that they could totally, I could see a book exactly like Exiles that goes back and kind of revisits all of these Elseworld universes. If you could have, they go into the Batman Blood, Blood Rain or whatever universe, and they go into the Superman Red Sun universe, and they go into all these different universes. That, again, if it's just a random collection of stories that don't really go anywhere, I don't see the point. I wouldn't mind seeing, like, maybe a character that we know somehow gets blown into some kind of alternate universe and just has to exist in that universe. Right, and except for it has to be one that I'm interested in, not a crappy
there is that.
Wildstorm universe. one of the DC universes, one of the Elseworld universes, and just, have it as an ongoing series. Explore that universe.
It could be a really interesting thing to do. It would work, I think, better for DC than Marvel just because of what they do and don't have. But imagine if you had something kind of like a S.H.I.E.L.D. organization, not quite Checkmate, but more S.H.I.E.L.D., but it was a cross-parallel universe organization.
Okay.
To where in any one world they could say, oh gosh, we've got this one problem, Superman's going nuts, we need to stop him or whatever. And they could draw on the resources of these various parallel worlds. Go pull in the good Lex Luthor of Earth 3, or some other Superman, or whatever. I mean, that could be kind of interesting.
So pretty much the Wave Rider idea,
parallel universes. I don't know. That sounds like an interesting idea. I'd buy that story.
Yeah.
Because
I would buy.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, you get it to where you've got the grunt level, operatives or whatever. And just the tour of, I'm usually on Earth 2, now I'm on Earth 15 or whatever. Oh, wow, things are different. Oops, I just bumped into my ex-girlfriend and she thinks we're married or, whatever. There's tons of fun stuff you could do with that.
That'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, great. Oh, parallel universe. So, that's my ex. Oh, we're married.
Batman Red, Batman Blue. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, God, now I just got a terrible image in my head of... There probably is at least one parallel universe out there where, as opposed to Robin becoming Nightwing, he just became, Batman 2. He got two Batmans running around.
What about Superman Red Sun? Did you guys like that?
I still haven't picked it up, so like I gotta bow out of this.
I'm trying to remember which one that was. Again, they've done.
So he grows up in the Soviet Union. You have all the JLA is pretty much Russian.
It was
characters.
It was okay. I didn't think it was brilliant. It was
a lot of great.
Or Boris Wayne.
I like the ending the best.
Well, don't give it away because
we'll go read it. You'll like it. The ending. I think they did the ending really well.
Okay. I have a Russian friend who has that sitting on his shelf, so I'll probably borrow it from him.
Kind of tied it into everything that's like, well, not tied it in, but it tied it into tied it into modern DC continuity.
Really? Huh. Okay. Well, that actually, I'm glad you brought that up before I go to the forum comments. About that whole, you know, Superman-Batman thing that happened recently, and it seems to be happening again now in the Superman universe. These are happening a lot more lately in the DCU, more than anywhere else, but we're getting a lot of those, you know, alternate reality, alternate future things going on here. But everything sort of resets itself. I mean, these sort of need to stay inside of a Superman-Batman type story in order to actually, you know, catch my interest. Because if it was going on in, say, you know, Superman itself, then I would probably lose interest in that pretty quickly. I mean, do they have to realize that at DC? That, you know, if they're going to have a Superman book, have Superman be in it, not, you know, Emperor Superman from, you know, Earth 7?
They don't have to realize anything. They're going to write what they write.
That's a shame.
And we have to write.
Well, no, we don't, but we will.
But we will, that's right.
Although I have to say, though, Emperor Joker was fantastic back in the day. Back when Loeb was writing that and McGinnis was on the art, Joker was the emperor of the entire universe, or whatever the hell it was.
It was an Age of Apocalypse riff over at DC.
Yeah.
I didn't think... I mean, it was entertaining and whatnot, but I didn't think it was brilliant or anything.
Well, my favorite part out of all of it, though, was the fact that Joker just kept killing Batman over and over and over again, to the point where he broke entirely. That was the first time that mind-wiping Batman came up. Because Superman had to mind-wipe him.
The last Superman-Batman arc? He brought back all these Batmans and he said just to kill them. And I was like, well, what is going on?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Well, that Superman-Batman arc.
He was sort of doing the same thing. Yeah, it did. Well, that was also because there was about a 12-month difference between, you know, one issue
the beginning
and two.
And the end.
They're finally getting around to putting that into a trade, aren't they?
It's out.
I think
it's in a hardcover.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh.
That crappy thing's in a hardcover. It doesn't merit a hardcover.
Few things.
Sigh. Yeah, right. Let's go to the forum comments here. A Modern Lover has something to say right off the bat, and I gotta say, before we even talk about what he says, excellent, excellent, excellent avatar there of Black Canary and Green Arrow. That is a really nice picture. Anyway, well, so far as sort of alternate universes go, the best is probably Watchmen. As a fan of alternate history novels such as those of Harry Turtledove and the way that Moore handles realistically the repercussions of people in costumes taking the law into their own hands and how the government would exploit superheroes for their own gain, among other things, and it is so detailed and well thought out. So, yet another Watchmen fan out there, big surprise. So, I guess that right away says that Watchmen definitely did do something right there, and as we stated, it probably did make sense that it was not the, you know, Charlton characters to make life easier there, but right away after that, Lobo comments, do Elseworlds count? If so, then Gotham by Gaslight. Have any of you guys read Gotham by Gaslight?
Yeah, just recently.
That was one of the first Elseworlds that came out, if I remember correctly, and I did pick that up at the time. Mignola, right?
Yeah,
on the artwork,
I think so. I could
Victorian era, Jack the Ripper story. I mean, yeah, you gotta love it.
Jack the Ripper,
That's pretty cool.
Basic thing was Jack the Ripper kills Bruce Wayne's parents or something. After Jack the Ripper, like, gets discovered or whatever, he stops being Batman. Because he's done.
It just seemed like a very by-the-numbers thing. It's like, okay, take a character, change the time frame. Okay, what does everybody know about that time frame? Victorian, England, okay, Jack the Ripper, boom, let's go. You know, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't inspired.
Yeah, it didn't impress me for all the hype that I've heard about it when I read it.
Well, again, you gotta remember that this is like one of the first, if not the first, Elseworlds book. So it had a bigger impact at the time when it came out because we weren't swarming in all these.
Well,
it got the ball rolling.
It was one of the first to have the Elseworlds imprint, but they had done Imaginary Stories, Parallel Worlds before, I mean.
Right, but I mean, usually it wasn't like this total reimagining of a concept that was a self-contained story that we've come to know as the Elseworlds kind of books.
Yes and no, kind of. I mean, we'd gotten stories before of you know, what if Superman had landed on a different planet and became, you know, one of the other Justice Leaguers, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, yes, it was kind of sort of new, but I don't think it was totally new and groundbreaking just as an Elseworlds as a concept, either. It was a good packaging of it. It certainly solidified the concept and the line or the brand or whatever you want to call it. And again, it wasn't a bad story, it just didn't work great for me.
I don't know about you, I'm still waiting for that storyline where, you know, the Elseworlds storyline where Superman lands on the Amazon's island and, you know, becomes Wonder Woman.
Transgender man.
That would work terribly. Chuck Austin, if you're listening, do not make that. Thank you. Anyway. Oh, man.
And why are you
there
listening?
We go. Yeah, right. There's the prerequisite Chuck Austin rag on the issue, and there we go. Matthew Guy has to say, I enjoyed the Speeding Bullets Elseworlds tale. It is a great story. Oh, great. Had I read this before, I would have realized it was the Speeding Bullets Elseworlds. Great. There we go. Also annuals before to 1992 from Action Comics Annual number 3, where Superman is President of the United States. President of the United States in the 2001 election. Super President, is it too late to recall President Bush, Vice President Cheney, and put Dean Cain for the top slot, Terry Hatcher for vice president in the White House instead of, since Tom Welling and Brandon Routh are too young to serve. Oh my God, that is just wrong. I mean, look at who won the government office in California. Arnold. Just a thought until 2009. A bad example is a recent Superman Batman annual, which had awful art. I got the vibe that Bruce Wayne was Wolverine in this poor excuse for an annual. I prayed that the Action Comics annual number 10 will be better in February, and that's Matthew Guy. Hopefully the annuals are going to bring this tradition back. I mean, they seem to be leaning towards that, where the annuals sort of give a bit of a different take on the characters, and that's really something that you could do in the annuals, as opposed to just selling an extra
story.
They
did that, though, with the Legends of the Dead Earth annuals back in 94. Have a Batman one that was pretty good, King Batman, but I didn't read anything
else. Was that the one where Supergirl was in the future and all that, and like there were, like, it was the quote-unquote legend of Supergirl, and like all these people with Supergirl shirts were running around?
I don't know. All I know, I think it all took place in the future.
It was Tales of the Dead Earth or something like that?
It was Legends of the Dead Earth.
Let's take a look at that. Legends of the Dead Earth. Legends.
Now, going on that Superman Batman annual that he mentions, was it just me or was that Deadpool in that issue?
It was like a Deadpool analog, but they screwed around with it. They never got around to saying his name.
Yeah, that kind of annoyed me. I don't care what they're going to call him, but give him a name.
Yeah, give him a name. But I think some of the art was good, but I think what turned him off was that it was like three different artists on one annual. I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's something that they should avoid. I mean, if you are going to put out an annual story, at least keep the flow artist-wise.
Or even a single comic book like Flash, you know? Keep it down to one artist. Ken Lashley has some other guy finishing his pages for him in Flash 5 and 6, I think.
That's always been the problem with annuals, is that annuals have pretty much always gotten, again, the B or C list creative teams, because the A list creators are busy doing their monthly book.
Doing monthly, yeah.
And that's always, you know, one of the problems. You know, part of the reason why I think for a long time we just said, you know, forget annuals. There's no point to them. They don't sell. And so I think they avoided them for a while. But, you know, if it's good quality, if you can get a decent team to work on it.
What about DC 1 Million? Does that count?
It depends, actually, because it really depends on whether or not you're putting that in canon or not, because they seem to be visiting those characters from time to time. As like a lot of the rumors out there about Supernova are that it could possibly be Starman 1 Million, so I don't know whether or not to consider that. I guess it's an alternate timeline.
It's an alternate
at least,
future,
an alternate
but
future.
It's also one that's got strong ties to current continuity. Because the Flash from that is John Fox, who was the Flash in the Flash title for a while.
Was the Flash in the Flash title?
Yeah, he took over for like a 6-issue arc or whatever when Wally went off gallivanting around. I forget exactly where.
Okay, he's not originally from the 1 Million timeline.
No,
I
not.
Remember that. Yeah, he was from the distant future, but not nearly as distant as DC 1 Million. Eventually, he ran all the way through time or something like that and ended up in DC 1 Million and became their Flash.
Yeah, it seemed like a nice place to hang out, I guess.
Well, didn't their Hour Man come to the DC Universe?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in the JSA for a while.
JSA, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, that Hour Man replaced the actual Hour Man and, you know, saved him from death. So, there you go. So, yeah, there are definite ties. And also, recently, Morrison mentioned DC 1 million in All-Star Superman. But then again, that's because Grant Morrison wrote DC 1 million. He likes mentioning that. We also have one comment here, actually, that was sent to the MySpace. And here we go with that. Hey, Ian, gotta say, great show. Started giving you guys a try about a month ago after hearing Sean pimp it much on Raging Bullets, which is exactly how Brent found it, so go figure. Not disappointed. Anyway, quick question on the crossover episode this week. You mentioned something about Liefeld doing a sideways issue, even after being told not to. I have never heard of this story. Would you mind relating it to me? Thanks a lot. Again, really enjoying the show. That's Carlos Cordova. Well, I looked it up, and actually, those of you who want to know about that, I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's actually, again, another thing I found on a comic book, Urban Legends Revealed. It was an issue of Hawk and Dove, issue 5 of the 5-issue miniseries he did back in the day with Carl Kessel, and apparently he did the entire sequence in the Chaos Dimension in landscape when he was not told to do it in landscape. They then had to crop the images to make it look right in the issue and turned it back the other way, and it looked very, very weird. It's sort of like what happens when you stretch a, like a letterboxed thing to a regular screen size, or when you try to make a regular screen size to a widescreen. It just didn't look quite right, and that's what happened with Liefeld. So without being told to do it in landscape, he did it in landscape, and that's the story of Rob Liefeld for you. So anybody remember...
Is it really bad to recut all the stuff and make it look stupid like that?
Well, apparently they didn't want to have to, reprint it that way. I guess maybe a cost extra or something.
Well, it may have affected the page count and how much story could be told.
It's possible, yeah. But any of you guys read the Hawk and Dove issue back in the day? Because I heard that Liefeld's art actually isn't too terrible on that.
The art was pretty good, but actually I think a lot of it was Carl Kessel either on the inks or actually doing a lot more of the art than a lot of people realize.
Gotcha, okay. But, landscape, when you're not supposed to do landscape, not a good idea. We'll just have to remember that for the future. But, yeah, any final thoughts on the whole parallel universe thing before we wrap things up here?
I guess bring back the multiverse. That's all I care about.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they should have done that in Infinite Crisis. I was very disappointed that they didn't.
Well, they're hinting towards a possible return. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but there have been recent issues that have came out that are hinting at that more and more and more, that there might still be something out there. So, who knows? You might get your wish sometime soon.
All right.
Maybe. Just maybe. Brent, any final thoughts?
I don't think they should bring back the multiverse because I don't want to start reading that just because I'm a new reader. Or newer reader than anybody else here.
Yeah. Okay. So we're split down the middle on that already. That's good. John, you want to make it even more split?
No, I'd love for them to bring it back, do it well. I enjoyed all the pre-crisis stuff, and I was a kid at the time, and I fully understood it. So, the reason they got rid of it was they thought readers were idiots, and I think the minute they start going down that line, they're doomed. But so be it.
And I mean, if we've seen nothing from the Marvel Ultimates line, is that you can have a totally separate continuity, alternate universe that can be successful and, is not too complicated.
So sure. Can we agree to say that if they do bring it back, do it in its own issues and not do, like, backups like they did do it? Is that why it failed the first time? Because it was, mixed up in the regular universe?
Well, no. When they had the multiverse and stuff, certain titles were set in this other universe. All-Star Squadron and Infinity Inc., there were strictly Earth 2 titles.
Right, and then the 70s Shazam book was on Earth S.
Freedom Fighters was on Earth X. Secret Society of Supervillains, mainly that one bounced around between...
Well, that's the problem, though. There were too many of them. If you just want to have, like, maybe one or two other Earths, that's one thing. But if you want to have
It doesn't really matter. They're all separate continuities. They're all separate timelines. They're just under the same DC banner. I mean, it's just the same thing as, like, just separate...
Image?
Completely separate universes. They're just... Each title has its own universe, which can cross over into the other ones if they so choose. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think the whole, like you said, the too complicated thing is blown way out of proportion.
I just think if they do parallel worlds, multiverse, whatever, that they don't make the mistake that I think has fallen, in place on certainly the Ultimate stuff and to a degree some of the Legion reboots of, rehashing old stories. Tell new stories, tell good stories, don't create a new little playground just so you can try to improve upon, some classic story of yesteryear. I don't need the coming of Galactus for the first time again.
Oh, you heard, he's coming again.
15th time's the charm.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, I liked that that story they were telling back in the Epic years ago was, you know, the very last Galactus story. And I guess we're now on the very, 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 very last Galactic story.
And if you believe that...
You've got a long box podcast. Exactly. So it's all good. Right. But, yeah, I guess we're sort of agreed on the fact that if you make good stories, we'll read them. So just don't make things too complicated. Don't make things too convoluted. And we'll go out there and read them, except for Brent. He doesn't want a multiverse. So it's all good. Yes, I think that we pretty much did a good job of actually, you know, explaining the whole parallel universe thing, and hopefully folks out there agree so, and we'll come back for more next time around. But before we wrap things up, obviously, let's start doing the plugs here. Matt, you got some time off now, and that's what she said, right?
No episode this week. The 14th, we're going to come back with a full hour episode called Benihana Christmas, and we'll have an appropriately lengthy podcast coming out that next Sunday then.
Benihana Christmas?
Yep.
Oh my god.
And like I said, it's a full hour episode. So it's, again, the first time that they've done this length.
So does that mean the episode that your episode will be 2 hours?
Maybe. I don't know. It's about 1 hour 20 for now a regular episode, so who knows?
Woohoo! Raging Bullets length.
I don't think I can handle that.
A 4-part special edition of... No, okay, that would just be bad, but you could find That's What She Said at, sir?
That is thatswhatshesaid.libsyn.com, or just go to iTunes and search for That's What She Said. It's the first thing that comes up.
All right, and also make sure to vote for that on Podcast Alley, because we like Podcast Alley love, so it's all good. And Brent, how about giving us a little bit of info on DK Bullets? How's that going for you so far?
It's going pretty good. Next one is on Teen Titans, and it should be on the next episode of Raging Bullets, so check that out.
Excellent. Cool. So, and that's what, your fourth one now?
Yes,
or?
I think it's the fourth or fifth one.
Nice. Now, I guess that's working out pretty well for you there, and actually, I've been really enjoying it. It's a nice way to get, you know, like, a quick rundown on some of the issues I haven't read, so hopefully other people are appreciating it nearly as much, and I'm sure Sean and Jim are loving not having to read those issues themselves, so it's all good. And John, have you done your latest Mayo report yet for this past month, or is that coming
Yeah,
up,
I just did that on Comic Geek Speak. That was episode 207. I'm going to be doing another Trade Secrets podcast for Chris over at Collected Comics Library. We should be recording that any day now. I've already gotten the numbers up over on comic book resources, and of course I've got them on my website at comicbookpage.com. So, yeah.
Spreading the Mayo love. Damn straight, man. And by the way, we are starting up the Brent Cassina Fund for New York Comic Con. Okay, no, maybe not, but it would be nice to see you making it out there, Brent. But I don't know if you'd be able to since you're living all in Florida and stuff. But no. Matt, get your butt out there.
What is the date of it again?
Well, New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd to 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPG, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guest of honors include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, visit nycomiccon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advanced purchases at nycomiccon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need. So that's the very long answer.
All right, well, that's good. You know, I don't know. I'm thinking about it. As long as you're going to hold on to that pass for me, I'll see what I can do. If I can find somewhere to crash, I think I'll talk to David, Vince, and everyone else. See who's getting a hotel room and see if I can snuggle up with them at night.
Well, I'm sure that David wants to get close.
Well, we already did sleep together in Chicago, so.
Too
yes,
much
exactly.
information.
That's just enough information.
I love how things can be thrown the wrong way when put the wrong way. It's absolutely terrific, man. But yeah, no, I do hope that you can make it out there. It'd be great. And John, I'll see you at episode 300.
That'll be in about March.
Next week?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Something like that. And also, once again, we are having our contest which will be running up until, I believe it is, yes, the 18th is the last day. So December 18th, that's when the contest runs out. It is a suggest a topic contest for Comic Timing, and the prizes include, it's a wonderful trade paperback of Volume 1 of Sin City, and also a John Cassaday poster of Captain America. Once again, that expires on the 18th, so get your suggestions in. Either send them to comictiming@gmail.com or send them to the Comic Timing Contest topic suggestion post on the forums. So go ahead and do that there. I am lost, dazed, and confused. I think I need to go to sleep. But anyway, I thank everybody once again for joining us on the show. I'm out of breath and I don't know why, so let me just end this here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. And please send us your votes on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. And a reminder that in January, we'll be joining the Raging Bullets guys for part two of our Confidential crossover. We'll be on their show, so I don't have to do the editing, for Batman Confidential number one. So that'll be plenty of fun. So once again, Brent, John, and Matt, thanks for joining me as always.
It was fun.
All right. And as always, there's always time for comics. Wow, I fell apart.
Yes, you did.
Yes, you did.
Jesus freaking Christ, I had no idea where the hell I was. It's ridiculous, man. Usually at the end of the episode, I'm like, wow, it's the end of the episode. Woo, that was just like...
Forgot to flip your switch.
Apparently. And, you know what it is? I gave blood today, and I've been sort of off because of
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
we'll
so.
Get it back.
Thank you. No, it's to check to see whether or not I have high cholesterol, so I don't want to get that back in me, man, all right? If there is high cholesterol, let that cholesterol that's inside the blood stay out.
You're only talking about some little tiny, like, test tube of blood.
It was about 3 test tubes.
No, that's not you pint, gave, like, no. A pint or something. It was like that.
Oh, yeah.
Sam's juice.
I know. But still, it left me dazed, and I had no idea where I was for a while there, so it's all good. I have black and blue...
Spider-Man, I'm a bit
fancy. No, but I should actually go get one. It'll make me feel better. Oh my god. I'm not that young, man, alright? Yeah, I'm wearing my Spider-Man underoos also. Yeah, right.
Speaking of too much information.
Yeah, right. But I heard they're making underoos for adults now.
Which just signifies how freaking stunted and ridiculous that we are. That we would actually buy
right,
such
exactly.
things.
Well, no, we're not those people, okay? Well, I don't know, maybe we are.
Well, we're part of that whole big comic adult nerds demographic.
Yeah, but we're not that bad, I hope. I hope. Yeah, basically.
Man.
I mean,
basically.